This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Tech Talk and I'm Jeff Sandhu. I'm here with Uma Pagan, Ampige Pagan. And because this is the year-end show, we decided to look back at 2013 in a different way. We are going through all our bank statements and then our credit card statements and to look back into what has been some of the best purchases, whether it's a toy, whether it's a technology. Some are useful, some are not useful.
That's why we call them toys.
Toys, yes. It's best toys of 2013.
I looked through my credit card statement. Some of them I'm still paying for.
I've maxed out one of them, so 2013 has been a great year, though.
It's hazardous for your job, Jeff.
It is hazardous. So let's start. Uma, I'll let you begin first. Number one on your list.
Number one on my list, it's not chronological, even though came out early in the year, is the Pebble for me. Not for what it is, but for what it means. You got yours recently as
Yes,
well.
Yes, yeah.
We were both Kickstarter backers, so we backed it really early, and it took about 18 months for it to finally arrive.
Yeah.
I think the Pebble is a very good implementation of the smartwatch. No one figured it out yet, right? No one knows what they want it to do. Do they want it to be a secondary phone? Do they want it to be a second screen for your phone?
Yeah, the problem, because a lot of people thought the smartwatch would do a lot more than just tell you the time and tell you who's calling and stuff.
And
like notifications. They wanted to do a lot more. Yeah, they wanted to do a lot more, but it failed. I mean, some of them failed.
Galaxy Gear is a colossal failure, right?
Yes.
Meanwhile, the Pebble doesn't try to do too much. It does give you notifications. You can play Snake on it.
It doesn't impress other people. When you tell them what does it do, they'll just go like, oh, okay.
But it's functional. It's useful. It helps me during meetings. I can silence calls. I can cut calls. I can check out a quick notification if it buzzes on my phone. I can see even emails come in.
Yeah.
It gives me up-to-date weather. But I think the potential is there with the Pebble because they've released an SDK. And now I think it's just entirely up to the developers out there.
Mm.
Pebble announced that they're going to have their own app store next year in 2014. And I think it really is a blank slate. For developers, whoever comes up with a very cool idea can make something happen.
Baby steps first, yeah.
Exactly, baby steps. Now, I don't think Pebble's worked out. I don't think Apple has a clue yet. Maybe they do. Maybe that's what's coming with the iWatch.
Yeah.
Samsung definitely hasn't. And Sony hasn't, right? Because we don't know what we want our smartwatch to be. We don't know if it's just going to track our activities and give us notifications or whether it should be used to take photos and upskirt pictures.
We don't even know whether the watch should be a smartwatch. We don't even know that,
Exactly. So I think there is potential. I think a GPS system in a smartwatch could supplement the GPS on your phone and could do a variety of interesting and fascinating things. But until they figure it out, I think your best money right now for $149?
It's $150 with free shipping.
Is a Pebble, right? Mm. You don't want to spend $1,500 ringgit on a Galaxy Gear that only works on two phones. Meanwhile, a Pebble works across platforms on Android, iOS. And I love it for the potential.
Mine would actually... Well, I actually had Pebble on my list until you told me that it would be number one. So I'm going to scratch it off. I'm going to go with the Tree Doodler. Now, this is again something that, from Kickstarter, the site where we all love. We all will, spend hours on Kickstarter just looking through what are some of the amazing things. And I
90% of the stuff we order never makes it to fruition. But still, we get our money back.
Yes. And one of them that came into fruition is the Tree Doodler. And this is a 3D pen, the world's first 3D pen. Again, the technology is not new. I mean, it's sort of copying the idea of having the soldering iron pen where, you use your aluminium and you melt it and you do stuff. However, this uses plastic ABS that you can get from hardware stores. And they don't cost a lot. They only cost about 5 ringgit a meter. And what you can do, the potential with this is huge.
So what you do is you print out a template, right?
Yeah, they've got a whole community going on. And even designers on Etsy have even jumped onto this community because they are selling earrings and necklaces based on this Tree Doodler. And what you do is they allow you to print out a template on an A4 paper or an A3 paper. And you can just draw four sides of whatever that you're building. For example, I just did an Eiffel Tower, which looks really horrible. But anyways, what they did was you just draw on each of these four sides and you just stick them together and it becomes a 3D object right in front of your face. It's very hard to explain to, some of the people when I snapped a picture and posted on Instagram and all that, and I told them it's a 3D pen. I actually drew this. And it mind boggles them. It's like, how can you draw something which is
in
a 3D?
Three-dimensional space?
How? Yeah. You know, only when you see it, you go like, oh, that's how it works. It's you can draw in a space where you could draw upwards, you could draw inwards, outwards. And I really think that this is the potential. Again, you know, 3D printing has sort of become the norm in 2013, and it's gonna be even, it's gonna progress even more further in 2014 with
and
all
I think
this.
That's the key, right?
Yeah.
3D printing. Now, it's not on my list because I don't own a 3D printer, but they've become so affordable in 2013. For $1,000 US, you can get one of those really industrial-looking 3D printers. I think for about $3,000 US, you can get a MakerBot.
Yeah.
So they become incredibly affordable. Now everyone can make their own iPhone cases.
Anyways, number two on your list, Omar?
So number two on my list is the Chromecast.
Ah.
Not a perfect product by any means. Mm. I mean, and Google's advertising for it really annoyed me because if you look at the advertising or any of the images they give you, it doesn't actually show the fact that you need to plug in the Chromecast and it needs power, either via USB or an AC adapter, right?
Yeah.
They conveniently hide that bit.
Even in all the product shots as well, there's no wire coming
out. No, there's no wire coming out. So you actually have to plug in Google's Chromecast into a HDMI port. Now, it's the size of a little HDMI dongle. Mm. And what it does is it allows you to stream anything from your phone, laptop, from your Chrome browser onto your big screen TV. It is a response to Apple TV. It is a response to Roku. But of course, this is only $35 US. It is super cheap. The reason it's on my list is because of the price point and the fact that Google's finally getting into the market with something good.
Mm.
So I think I was waiting for Google to get into this market because at the moment, the Roku is great for the United States. The Apple TV's made it out because of the iTunes store spreading all over the world now. Even Malaysia, we can rent movies.
And Apple TV's not that expensive as well. It's about 350 ringgit or so.
300 ringgit, right? Mm. 350 ringgit. What's great about Google getting into the market is I think it creates this extra level of competition because they released the Google Q, which is a complete and utter failure in the sense that it didn't even make it to market, right? Mm. And it was made in America, but it cost some stupid amount, $400 US, something ridiculous, yeah. Right? And so Google's wising up. And the reason why I think this competition and this product is so important is because this is the future. I'm convinced that, you know, it's not about replacing your TV. You know, it's not about replacing the TV as the hub. It's about augmenting the TV as the hub. And I think Apple, every month now on the Apple TV, you get new channels added. They just added ABC. They added Masterpiece, a PBS, so you can watch all the Downton Abbey you want. And, you know, they've done it. So I think that's the key. It's augmenting with channels. Like Roku has over 300 channels for you to stream from. And I think cable companies and satellite companies are going to have a real run for their money because, you know,
if they don't evolve, yeah.
If they don't evolve in this way, because the box itself is so cheap. There's barely any subscription for most of the channels. It's small, it's cheap, and the potential is awesome.
Mm. $35 US,
$35 US.
That's insane. Second on my list is something that actually you purchased it, and it's, I feel, it's again, it's not a perfect product, but there's a lot of potential. It's the Leap Motion. This is the small...
this was on the short list, I will admit. It was on my short list.
It was.
But Jeff.
Yes, I know. No, but the potential of it is huge.
Okay, so for those of you who don't know, the Leap Motion is basically changing your computer into Minority Report.
Yeah.
Basically, you just use your hands and you can move it. It's a little device which is even smaller than your phone. It is the size of like 3 USB dongles put together. And it plugs into your computer and you can use your hands to control whatever's on the screen. A la Minority Report.
Yeah. And how much did you buy it for?
$99 US or something?
So $100 US for something small and it's not useful, but the technology is. And that's why it's made into my shortlist, simply because there's nothing that comes close to it at the moment.
No, you're right.
Yeah. And imagine if Apple, for example, buys over this product and implements it into the trackpad and all that.
Because it's so small.
Yeah, it's so small. And I'm sure it's only a matter of time before 2014 comes and, you know, it could be Apple, it could be, you know, a PC manufacturer just get into this technology, embed it into the trackpad, and bang, you know, you've got something that it's very cool, very funky, and I like these things. I mean, we're suckers for all this kind of...
Yeah, that's why I bought it.
Yeah, you know, Minority Report
now,
style.
Speaking of which, there's something you ordered and I ordered which hasn't arrived yet, which is a very similar gesture-based control, only it attaches
the
to your
Mayo,
wrist.
Yes.
So this one kind of attaches to your arm, And it makes you look like bionic.
Yeah.
But it registers your muscle flexing. And that's
the
how...
The nerves and all.
And that's how it controls gestures and what is on the screen. I don't know how it works yet. I've only seen a video on YouTube.
Shipping is apparently in March 2014.
Apparently.
And yeah, it's been a long time. I think we both of us kind of pre-order it in earlier this year.
Yeah.
In February or so. We've got to wait for another at least 6 months before we actually get it. But you're right. So far from what we've seen on YouTube... it's pretty damn impressive.
Even for gaming, right? Mm-hmm. Now, with the Leap Motion, I have to say, no practical... If you thought the Pebble was impractical, this one has no practical use at all. I've used it twice, Jeff, since I bought it. I've used it twice. Because I don't know what to do with it. I sit around, I play with stuff on the screen, I'm like, ooh, this is so cool. Okay, now I need to do some actual work. In that way, I guess the Kinect is probably better.
Yeah. Yeah, but the Kinect hasn't been around, not just 2013. That's why Kinect didn't made it into our list. I'm here with Uma Pagan, MPK Pagan, and we are going through the best toys of 2013. When we come back, more toys. BFM 89.9. Jeff Sandu here, and with me is Uma Pagan, MPK Pagan, and we are going through the best toys of 2013 just by looking at our credit card details for the whole year. So we had the Pebble, we had the Leap Motion, we had the Tree Doodler, and we also had the Chromecast. What's next, Uma?
Okay, so next on my list is a music product. It's by Sonos. So Sonos is a wireless music company. They've been around for a long time and they've made lots of great speakers. They've always been on the steeper end of the price scale.
Very expensive.
Right? For the longest time, you couldn't get them in Malaysia unless you ordered it from Singapore. Because I think there was one Malaysian distributor that was very, very expensive. So now you can find Sonos products in machines, in the Mac stores, as well as, I think, Radio Shack are becoming one of their big distributors in KL.
That's nice.
Now, the Sonos is... I love this. When I was redoing the sound in my house, the sound system in my house, I decided to go Sonos. There are lots of wireless speakers around. Bluetooth-enabled speakers, AirPlay-enabled speakers, NFC-enabled speakers, right? And they're very cool. They're standalone units. What makes the Sonos stand out is the fact that it's standalone... or completely syncable, in the sense that you can buy one Sonos speaker and have it in your room as a wireless speaker, or you can buy seven and have it all across your house, and all the sound will sync perfectly with each other. Or in different rooms, you can play different music. It's all connected via Wi-Fi, and it works a charm. Now, it's been out for a while, but the reason I picked it for 2013 is because they released what's called the Sonos Play 1. Now, all these speakers have different, the Play 3, the Play 5, the soundbar, and the Sonos Sub, which is like a wireless subwoofer, which is also amazing, but it's about 3,500 ringgit. I can't afford that anymore. So, but the Sonos Play 1 is about 1,100 ringgit, and it's a little speaker, which is about the height of an upstanding phone, and just not very bulky at all. The sound is incredible. It's got great bass. It's got great treble. It sounds very cool. But the price point for access and the potential of it is what makes it even cooler. So if you buy a Sonos soundbar, which is a multi-speaker system that sits under your TV, and you add, say, two Sonos Play 1s, you suddenly get a 5.1 surround system.
Well, I'm going to stick with something, a music thing again. But this is not what I bought. This is actually what I got for Christmas from some of the very lovely people at Jabra and also Spotify.
Yes.
So Spotify actually sent me a Jawbone, Spotify edition.
Custom Jawbone.
Yes, very cool. Custom Jawbone. Very cool. And you know what? I actually never realized that I'll be using this a Bluetooth speaker as often as I thought I would. Simply because nowadays, when I go home, what I do is, because my Bluetooth on my phone is always turned on, and whenever I go into my room, it automatically logs onto my Jawbone if it's plugged in and there's battery into it. And what I do is I just go on to TuneIn Radio and listen to songs and, you know, or Spotify or whatever, you know, and it's so much more easier now that I don't have to physically plug something in, whether it's a cable or it's a power out power cable, or even just for, like, you know, my laptop. Have to turn on the laptop, go into Spotify, play music, and then, you know, plug in your 5.1 speakers and all that.
Yeah.
I don't need 5.1 speakers in a small tiny room. All I need is just a small player. And I realized a lot of Bluetooth speakers, you can get there's the Jabra Soulmate, there's the Jawbone Mini, and then there's the other one that you have as well, which is the Jawbone. They showed me a red color Jawbone, which is
it used to be the original Jawbone speaker original before they had the Jawbone big boombox and the
right? Yeah. They've got so many, and then I think Panasonic has one as well, or Philips has one called the Shockbox. The one that you can travel around, you can throw it in the water and stuff like that.
That's so right. Ovio has
Ovio
one.
Has
and
one
I think
as
you
well.
Can link those as well to make multiple speaker systems also.
Yeah. So, you know, there's tons of this. And for the price, like you said, you know, for 650 ringgit or so, which is about the same price as the Soulmate and the Jawbone, I find it as a it's a good buy. Moving on to another one on my list is the Circuit Scribe. It's not really called the Circuit Scribe, but that's basically what it is. It's a pen that you could draw circuit wires, and it's using electricity to it's using a 9-volt battery for you to draw circuit wires to link up from one capacitor to another capacitor, and then you can, you know, just do. And this is something that you got me for my Christmas gift.
That's right.
Which is fantastic because I went on to Kickstarter and I found that actually there's a project that's currently going on, and it's the same technology. It's a pen that you plug into a 9-volt battery or a USB cable, and you can draw circuit cables to power up whatever, you know.
Yeah, you don't, no more soldering.
No more soldering.
No more wires.
Nothing. And you can draw it on a piece of paper. That, for me, is huge.
No, and for me, you know what's really cool about it? Imagine the potential for magazines and newspapers to interactive elements like that which light up. And I think someone's already done it with the Moto X.
Mm.
And I think, I don't know whether they use the circuit scribe or whether they use actual cables, but on a magazine ad for the new Moto X, right, which has been out for about 6 months, they have the back of a Moto X and lots of buttons. And if you press the button, the back changes color. And it uses a different LED to change color because obviously the Moto X is customizable and you can have whatever colors you want. But it's a very cool ad which appeared in a magazine. So I'm like, wow, that's pretty impressive.
Uma, another one on your list?
Yes. The other one on my list is the Impossible Projects Instant Lab.
Ah.
So this is now available off Kickstarter, but it was a Kickstarter project. Now, the folks at the Impossible Project are the guys who revived Polaroid. So they bought over the Polaroid factory and started making Polaroid film again. It's a bit expensive because, you know, production is still quite limited, but it's becoming cheaper. It's become cheaper over the years. They started quite a few years ago. Their ultimate goal, even when they started, if you go to their website, was to create a camera, was to create the ultimate Polaroid camera, right? They want to, and I think they're still working towards that. But in the meantime, and I really applaud them for this, they decided to evolve. And they went, you know what? Everyone takes photos on their phone. So why not create a way to merge digital and analog? So what they did was they invented this docking station on top of a, essentially what's a Polaroid camera or an instant lab. So you take your iPhone and you dock it on it, and you have an app, and you select what photo you want on that app. It's very physical. You have to do things with your hands. You put it on, and your flash goes off on your iPhone. And when the flash goes off on the iPhone, you can see the light. You pull open a lever, and you're essentially developing the film. When the flashlight turns off again, you push it in, and then you press the button, and your Polaroid gets ejected. So it transfers whatever photos, Instagrams you've taken into an actual physical product instantly. And so it actually makes use of these photos that you've taken on your phone. You know, you can sign it. You can give it to a friend at parties. It's nice. It's more than just cute. I mean, Fuji has Instax and so on and so forth.
But it's another device that you have to carry.
It is another device you have to carry around, but it's not something you need to carry around. Something you can keep at home. And, you know, you can take all the photos you want on your phone, and then you just go home and you transfer it over. Polaroids have a certain appeal to them. I don't know
they
whether
do,
it's
yeah,
this
they
old
do.
World appeal, whatever it is, nostalgia. People seem to like it. So it works. I mean, it's not the cheapest of products, but I enjoy it because I think it's made from a company where these people love photography and they love Polaroids and they love analog.
All right, so last on my list is something that none of us have it, but you can buy it for $300 US, and it's only available in developer's edition. This is the Oculus Rift. It's the 3D augmented reality virtual gaming headset. Which is, if you have no idea what this is all about,
what those words mean,
all you have to think of is imagine wearing a pair of goggles while playing your favorite game, for example, Call of Duty, Modern Warfare, and you walk around in this space, in this 3D space, and it's just, this is stuff that kids dream of. This is stuff that I dreamt of when I was a kid.
Well, this is what we were promised.
Yes.
10, 15 years ago when we were kids, and you know, like Nintendo had the Virtua Boy, and they had all these virtual reality nonsense, but nothing ever came of it.
Nothing ever came about until we saw the developer's edition of the Oculus Rift. And since then, there's also, they even made the walking treadmill where you can actually just, it's a circular.
It's a circle.
Yeah, it's a circle. You step into the circle, you wear your Oculus Rift headset, and you walk around. You're basically playing the character of the game. And it's a very tiring thing. I've seen some of the journalists who went there and try it out and all. It's a real workout, you know, if you're playing Call of Duty and all. You got to run. And if you need to run, you need to run, physically run. And I love the concept of this. And I really can't wait for this to become a consumer version. Because currently it's only in developer's edition. And there's very limited units. It's about $300, which for a developer's edition is not that expensive.
No, I was just going to say, the Oculus Rift aside, I think on our list, both Jeff and I, the PS4 would probably be on our list if
both of us
actually could get our hands on one and have a go. But we haven't yet.
I'm refusing to get one until they have launched the Gran Turismo 6 special edition bundle set where it comes in white or something like that. I'm just going to hold on for a while. Uma, last on your list.
Last on my list is a predictable one, actually. It's the iPad Air.
Okay. All right. That's all the time.
Oh, come on. Come on. Don't be a hater. You know what? I mean, no. Now, I don't have any smartphones on my list, and neither do you. Because I think this year has been quite evolutionary for smartphones.
Boring.
Yeah, nothing's kind of blew my mind. I mean, I used the 5S and the Nexus 5. They're both brilliant phones. 5S is great. That fingerprint scanner thing is revolutionary. I won't deny it because it's made fingerprint scanning accessible and it works for the everyday person. You don't have to rub your finger over the device 10 times before to unlock your phone. It just works, right? Yeah. The iPad Air, I think, is also evolutionary, but I think it's evolution in the absolute right direction. Tablets have become so ubiquitous and become so useful to us every day. They haven't replaced my laptop yet because the lack of a keyboard and is still an issue when it comes to writing articles and editing audio, for example, especially things like what Jeff and I do, right? It's a bit susala with your finger to edit an audio file and be accurate. But as consumption devices, they're fantastic for watching HD movies, for reading books, and so on and so forth. iPad Mini was a wonderful device, and even the iPad Mini with Retina is even better.
Yep.
But I think the iPad Air gives me that big screen and now in a much lighter, slimmer body.
Very, very light.
Now, for me, I'm sure there will come a time when Android catches up in the app market for tablets, but they haven't yet. The Android tablets are still incredibly boring.
It's just a bigger phone. That's what it feels. Yeah.
They still have very limited apps that are specially designed for the tablet. They have great tablets out there. They have great hardware.
Yeah.
But the software hardware thing doesn't work. And for me, why the iPad Air is on my list is because sheer size value alone, what they've done to reduce it to that size and still have that incredible battery life, it's still got the best battery life of any tablet on the market, is phenomenal. I don't have to worry about charging it. I can take it on long trips. If you buy the 128 gigabyte edition, you can store, 12 HD movies and still have 64 gigs left for whatever you want to do. Right? I mean, and that's key. I have to say, most important point. Onboard memory is so important for tablets, and Android tablets have appalling onboard memory. It's always an option between 16 and 32 for the majority of the tablets on the market. Now, you don't have access to high quality streaming of films or even enough data on your data plans to be streaming that kind of stuff. So for most people, you have to buy film or steal a film and keep it on your device physically, right? Which is why 64 gigs and 128 gigs. I mean, next year, Jeff, 4K movies are going to become standard downloads, right? My prediction, of course, is still that by calling it the iPad Air, I have a feeling they're releasing an iPad Pro. I think that's why they've changed the nomenclature. iPad Mini, iPad Air, iPad Pro. I don't know what the hell you're going to use an iPad Pro for. Any bigger, and it'll just be too much to carry around.
It has a slide-out keyboard.
Maybe. Who knows, right? Now the iPad isn't perfect. You know, multitasking is still an issue. It's got, it's got all those limitations that iOS has, right?
But it's the only tablet that you should look at.
I think so.
Yeah.
And also as a consumption device, because I don't think tablets are workhorses yet.
Yeah.
Unless you buy buy a Surface. But it's not like you can do anything on a Surface.
Exactly. Uma, thank you very much.
Thanks, Jeff.
I've been speaking to Uma Pagan and PK Pagan, and we are going through the best toys of 2013. This is Tech Talk on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.